From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up at Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Lev Parnas, the associate of President Donald Trump's attorney Rudy Giuliani, has been spilling the beans on an extensive media tour just as the U.S. Senate impeachment trial kicks off. Parnas is a Russian-born U.S. citizen who was arrested last year, along with another colleague, Igor Fruman, as they attempted to leave the country on one-way tickets. Parnas says that he, along with Giuliani, carried out much of the sordid Trump plan to pressure Ukraine to investigate Joe Biden in exchange for a release of U.S. military aid. That plan and the attempt to cover it up is at the heart of the two articles of impeachment against Trump that the House passed. Meanwhile, in Ukraine, President Volodymyr Zelensky, who has yet to complete his first year in office, is plagued by more political problems than the Trump scandal. Ukraine's Prime Minister, Oleksiy Honcharuk, offered to resign on Friday after his private criticism of the president became public. Zelensky has reportedly refused to accept the resignation. My guest is David Marples, a distinguished university professor at the University of Alberta in Canada, specializing in Ukraine, Russia, and Belarus. Welcome to the program, David.
Thank you.
So Ukraine has sort of unwittingly been dragged into the U.S. impeachment scandal, essentially because Trump saw this opportunity to get something to benefit him. And the military aid that Ukraine relies heavily on was at first dangled and then released, held back and then released. So in just the last week, the Government Accountability Office in the U.S. found that Trump's withholding of that military aid to Ukraine was indeed illegal because it went against what the U.S. Congress had decided. From where you sit, how seriously is Ukraine's role? How serious is Ukraine's role in this impeachment scandal? Because, of course, what Trump has done to Ukraine is at the heart of this impeachment crisis. But Ukraine is its own country with its own agenda.
Yes, it is. But I think there are several levels in Ukrainian society that need to be considered. I mean, first of all, there's the president himself, who is new and only came into office last June. And then, of course, his cabinet, which was appointed last summer as well. And then on a kind of secondary level, there's a group of businessmen, that's probably a polite way to put it, oligarchs is usually the term that is used, who've operated in Ukraine with some freedom for some time and had numerous dealings, with counterparts or other officials in the United States. And then there's sort of the mass of Ukrainians below, the people, who elected Zelensky into power to get rid of corruption. At least that was one of the main reasons, one of his main platforms in coming into the election in the first place. And on top of that, you've got the fact that Zelensky is really a neophyte when it comes to politics. I mean, his career was in comedy, TV star, really an unexpected figure to emerge into Ukrainian politics. So he's an outsider and he's suddenly confronted with all these problems, the U.S. impeachment scandal, his prime minister resigning, the opposition turning against him, and at the same time he's trying to reach a deal with Russia on the war in the Donbass and basically put an end to the conflict there. So he's kind of besieged by problems. And I think the biggest issue for him are officials who were operating under his predecessor, President Poroshenko, mainly from the Office of State Prosecution, powerful prosecutors who, and I'm sure this is your next question anyway, who have had long association with Rudy Giuliani, who is perhaps the most frequent high-level U.S. visitor in Ukraine over the past 17 or so years. I mean, I don't know how many times he's been in Ukraine, but I know it began in 2003, and he's developed personal relations with these people, and it's for a kind of mutual benefit. For the most part, it seemed to me that they benefited from Giuliani's name. I mean, some of them were prepared to pay a lot of money to hire Giuliani as a consultant, and On the other hand, it now seems to have come more or less full circle. And I think now these people are in some difficulties. And, you know, Parnas and his partner, whose name escapes me for a second.
Fruman, Igor Fruman.
Yeah, were both born in the Soviet Union. Fruman, I believe, was born in Gomel region of Belarus, or Belarusian Republic as it was then. And Parnas in Odessa in the southern part of Ukraine. And they both sort of operated in the United States from an early age. I know Parnas left when he was about 3 years old. But they seem to have retained some kind of connection or developed new connections with Ukraine. So these are the kind of logical places for them to be involved in.
I want to bring up the fact that Giuliani, you said, who's been in the Ukraine so many times, he was in Ukraine as the House was voting on their articles of impeachment late last year. I mean, the impunity is quite stunning. He said he was there to gather, you know, evidence around the Bidens. And he has claimed over and over again, or rather President Trump has claimed over and over again, that his sole mission in Ukraine was to root out corruption. But from what you're describing, it sounds like Giuliani himself was at the heart of the sorts of corruption that we've seen in Ukraine over the years.
Yeah, and I think, you know, his biggest problem when he, you know, over the past year, let's say, has been the U.S. ambassador, Marie Jovanovich, who was actually very much opposed to the corruption and stood as a kind of impediment in the way of the schemes of some of the guys around Giuliani. And there seems to have been a coordinated campaign supported by Trump, actually, who certainly didn't like her at all, to get rid of her. I listened to Parnas on an interview this past week, and he was sort of saying, well, she was fired several times, but wouldn't resign. And I found that a little bit far-fetched, you know, since if an ambassador is fired by the president, then there's no question but she would have to resign. So my thought was, well, who is doing the pressurizing here? Who's trying to fire her if it's not coming directly from the president himself? But clearly, you know, she then departed from the scene. And this really added a sort of black mark, as far as I was concerned, on U.S. foreign policy, that you would remove somebody like that who was well known to be an honest and sincere and hardworking ambassador with a lot of experience, and simply and justifiably removed from office in that kind of fashion. Some of the people that Giuliani was dealing with have now being removed from office by the new president, Zelensky, such as Yuri Lutsenko, the former prosecutor general. And Yovanovitch certainly believed that he was involved in corrupt practices. So I think one of the difficulties perhaps for people like Giuliani is now he's got to deal with a new administration, which is not necessarily going to be so welcoming as the previous one. And therefore, he's kind of had to start again, which may explain why he went back late last year after the impeachment campaign had started, which also seemed to me a little bit presumptuous and unusual, let's say.
I want to focus on Marie Jovanovitch and what we now know as per Lev Parnas's documents also happened to her. The documents that were turned over to House investigators in the impeachment by Lev Parnas include evidence that she was essentially being surveilled, not necessarily by the U.S. government, or at least it's not known if the U.S. government had anything to do with it, but by a Trump supporter, you know, just a congressional candidate named Robert Hyde, who seems to have been monitoring her. And our State Secretary Mike Pompeo has said he had no knowledge whether she was being surveilled. Her lawyers have asked the government to look into it. And then Ukraine announced that it would be investigating Yovanovitch's surveillance. What does that indicate to you? Because Ukraine has so far seemingly stayed out of the fray. The U.S. impeachment issue has been a very thorny issue for Zelensky. It's clearly something he wished he didn't have to deal with. Does the announcement that Ukraine will investigate whether Yovanovitch was surveilled indicate a different position on the impeachment?
It may do. But, you know, the events you described at the beginning about the resignation or voluntary resignation of the prime minister, which was turned down by Zelensky, suggests to me that there has been a conflict within the Ukrainian government itself, and some kind of divisions between supporters of reform and supporters of the status quo. And it may stem a little from the reluctance of the president to really take a lead on some of these issues. He's been very reticent as far as the Trump impeachment is concerned, mainly, I think, because he's been desperate to get this military aid, which is necessary for the conflict in the East. And, you know, as you mentioned, the letter he sent originally to Trump was very sort of conciliatory, almost kowtowing to Trump as some sort of great leader who knew much more than he did.
But of course, that's the basis of the U.S.-Ukraine relationship, is that there's a dynamic here at play that Ukraine relies on the U.S. So it's in Zelensky's interest to ensure that no feathers are ruffled.
Yes. I mean, the unfortunate situation for Zelensky is, in military terms, they simply cannot do without this aid. The entire state would be in some danger if they didn't get this U.S. aid. Of course, under Obama, lethal weapons were not sent to Ukraine. I mean, this is a new decision that was taken under Trump, and somewhat unusual, I think, in some ways that he agreed to do that, given his apparent friendship with Putin. But nevertheless, he did do that. And Ukraine really has now improved its army, it's improved its weapon system, and it's got a lot of Western support. And it kind of relies on that in its movement towards Europe, let's say, towards the West and away from the Russian sphere, even though in many ways Ukraine cannot conceivably leave the Russian sphere entirely. It still needs Russian, let's say, natural resources like oil and gas. It uses Russian nuclear power stations, etc. So even though Ukraine is trying to establish some kind of autarky in terms of its economic links to Russia, it cannot completely cut off a neighbor of that much power. So I think you've got this situation where you do have some kind of a division that was suggested to me today. But I don't think it's as bleak as it looks, because I think the threat to resign was merely a recognition that Zelensky should have the final say, who's in his cabinet and who's making the decisions. But he is sort of so new to the job that many people don't think he's a real expert. And as a result, he's had also to keep links open with some of the more powerful oligarchs who most people in Ukraine would like to see gone. One of whom is Kolomoisky, who I believe also was one of the people discussing events with Parnas. So it comes full circle, you know, and if Zelensky is still keeping Kolomoisky around, Kolomoisky's dealing with Parnas and Giuliani, then Zelensky is involved with this whole thing, and maybe now the stronger statement.
And so interesting, because both Zelensky and Trump are former TV stars who didn't have any experience in politics. Of course, very, very different personalities in very different situations. But part of apparently what the prime minister who's offered his resignation had said about Zelensky was that he didn't know anything about the economy, that he had a primitive knowledge of the economy, which who knows if that's true. You can tell me if that's true or not. But certainly it's clear, you know, that Zelensky's counterpart in the U.S. Knows very little about much other than his own business dealings. So I want to just turn to something else that Lev Parnas has revealed in his his media tour, which is that he and Giuliani together acted in concert to carry out Trump's interests in Ukraine. And part of that was influencing or getting Mike Pence, Vice President Mike Pence, to cancel his trip to Ukraine to attend Zelensky's inauguration. Pence says he knows nothing about that, doesn't even know Parnas. What do you make of this? How important was Pence's presence in Ukraine when Zelensky was inaugurated last year?
Well, I think he was very important. I mean, ideally, they would have liked Trump himself to show up for that event. But Pence was certainly high profile enough as far as they were concerned. So it was quite a threat. I mean, if they sent someone very low level, it would be look like it was a lack of faith in the change of power in Ukraine. United States had been on good terms with the previous president, Poroshenko, but Poroshenko was much more forthright, I think, in his political ambitions. And although he was also an oligarch, he was also a strong supporter of, let's say, Ukrainian national independence, a strong position, a strong army, and certainly putting up more as a kind of defiant wall against Russia, even to the point of trying to cut off communications, trade. Ukrainian flights, for example, to Moscow were banned under Poroshenko. The Ukrainian Orthodox Church separated from the Russian Orthodox Church, which was actually a big political move in those circles. And then Zelensky comes in, and it's not quite sure where he's coming from. I mean, he's obviously a TV star. He comes from an industrial region of East Ukraine. His knowledge of the Ukrainian language seemed to be fairly shaky. He certainly seems to have improved a lot now. But when he came to office, he was mainly known as a Russian speaker. And I think a lot of people who were, let's say, more committed to a nationalist type of Ukraine were very concerned when Zelensky came to power. And internally now, the former president Poroshenko is kind of leading a group that is more or less disruptive. I mean, it's joining in with protests against Zelensky. It's claiming that he's giving things away to the Russians. He's giving up military positions in the east. And he's basically communicating constantly with Putin or with the Russian government, which, of course, he's obliged to do if he wants to put an end to the war. I mean, he can't simply cut off relations altogether. So I think that makes a very complex set of affairs. You know, even without the US impeachment scandal, there would be problems in Ukraine today. And I think they're likely to develop further. The economy is beginning to improve slightly, but still, it's in a dangerous situation regarding balance of payments right now. So I think Zelensky has to, you know, tread very carefully. And it doesn't help him at all having the impeachment scandal taking place and people like Parnas, being arrested and then spilling the beans on Trump. The only thing I would mention from what you said previously is that when Giuliani's communicated with people like Parnas, he's expressly stated in letters that he represents Trump as a personal associate rather than as president. Now, whether you can separate those two positions in the United States, I don't know, because I would have thought that whatever the businessman does, Trump the businessman does, is actually now Trump the president acting. And whether you can split the two, I don't know, but I suspect that question will come up in the impeachment campaign.
Right. I think that's actually critical, because if Giuliani, you know, has put this in writing, which Parnas's documents show, that he was acting with Trump, the, you know, citizen, he was at the same time influencing U.S. foreign policy for Trump, the citizen, which is something, of course, he has no right to do. He is not a government official. He is the president's personal attorney. Now, there's also the issue of Burisma, the natural gas company that Hunter Biden, Joe Biden's son, was on the board of, and that has been that tantalizing connection that Trump has been hoping, or had been hoping, would yield some information about corruption of Joe Biden. That company, we've just heard in the last few weeks, was actually hacked by Russian hackers, the same organization, the GRU, that was involved in the 2016 U.S. election and, in influencing public opinion here in the U.S. The FBI is now apparently helping Ukraine investigate that hacking. Is Russia taking full advantage of Ukraine's difficult position as this impeachment scandal unfolds?
Yeah, I think Russia will always take advantage of this type of situation under the current regime, that it sees a sort of Ukraine leadership is an opponent, really. It's not really following Russian mandate or belonging to the Russian sphere of interest at the moment. And Russia regards Ukraine, in fact, that whole area with Belarus as well, as an area of Russia's natural influence and legitimate influence, and that United States is one of the countries that's trying to undermine Russian influence in the neighboring states. And the question really is, you know, whether these states have the right to exist as independent forces, or are we to consider, say, that Russia is the successor to the Soviet Union and the Soviet Union had control over all these states? And I would have thought that that ended in 1991 and that now Russia on its own should be regarded as a separate state from Ukraine, Belarus, and others. And if that's the case, you know, then Russia certainly shouldn't be doing this kind of thing. But it never misses an opportunity to keep Ukraine weak, to keep it from moving to the West. And from their perspective, God forbid, they should never think of joining NATO, because that would be the final red line, I think, as far as Moscow was concerned. And so it doesn't surprise me at all that Russia has taken this role once again. I mean, it would naturally do that. And cyber attacks have been carried out before in many cases, not only in Russia, but even in the Baltic states. It's a familiar way, actually, to try to interfere in the affairs of neighboring states.
And Russia, I should say, has had its own political shakeup in recent days with President Vladimir Putin replacing, shaking up the parliament and naming a new prime minister as he attempts to consolidate his power, right? So all of these things happening at the same time.
It's difficult to analyze that one. You know, I don't think many people predicted that that was going to happen.
Yeah.
And most of us have been scratching our heads to think of why he would do that. I mean, one thing I thought of was that earlier he attempted to revive the Union of Russia and Belarus and went into serious negotiations with President Lukashenko of Belarus over the Christmas period, which came to nothing. And Lukashenko gave absolutely nothing away in terms of Russia integrating Belarus with Russia into some kind of massive union state, which in theory Putin could then have led when he stepped down as president. And then now you get the idea that instead of a presidency, Russia will operate through a parliamentary system. One possibility is that a parliamentary system, say it's implemented in the same way that Estonia has been structured, then the parliament itself chooses the leader of the country. I mean, in Estonia's case, it's actually still the president, but it's chosen from within the parliament rather than in the country as a whole in a national election. And that may be to Putin's benefit to be re-elected perhaps as prime minister just simply through the parliament rather than in a national election where you can get people like Navalny causing problems for him. Particularly that in 2024, Putin will be, 72 years old, something like that, I think. I'm pretty sure that's right, 72 years old. So 72 perhaps is not that old in as far as the West is concerned. It's less than Trump is now. But in Russia, traditionally at 70, politicians tend to retire or step down from leadership.
Well, David, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. The Senate impeachment trial commences in just a few days, and we'll certainly be covering that in detail. Thank you very much for joining us.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure. Thank you.
My guest has been David Marples, Distinguished University Professor at the University of Alberta in Canada, specializing in Ukraine, Russia, and Belarus. We've been discussing the politics of Ukraine and the Trump impeachment trial. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, subscribe to our video channel on Vimeo, and find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify.